This week, April 21st, 2015, on The Digital Story. Lightroom 6 ready for prime time. The Panasonic 20mm F1.7 hands-on. Firmware update makes for a fast start. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. Have a terrific show for you this week. Guess what? Lightroom 6 is available. Yes! It's also called Lightroom CC, and I'm going to explain that in just a bit. Then also been taking a new optic for a test drive, the Panasonic F1.7 20mm street shooter. Ooh, it's a beauty. We're going to talk about that. Have some firmware update action for you. Have a weekly update. Have a screening room. Oh my gosh. So much to cram into so little time. So let's get going with the weekly update. Weekly update. Apple buys camera technology company LinX. And that's L-I-N capital X. The acquisition would indicate that Apple is planning to do more of the imaging hardware development in-house. Currently, the iPhone range uses image sensors supplied by Sony. An implementation of the LinX technology in future iPhone generations could not only mean improved image quality, but also a whole new range of features. And this was sourced by DP Review. And I do think it's interesting because the mobile phones, the smartphones, have been so disruptive in the camera space, basically wiping out low-end compact cameras. The high-end cameras are still surviving because of larger sensors and better optics. But the problem is, at least the problem for camera manufacturers, is that Apple, Samsung, HTC, Nokia and company, they're not sitting on their hands. They're not content with just having the camera that you always have with you in your pocket. They want a camera that is amazing. And I think Apple making this latest purchase is a perfect example that we are by no means done with the development of mobile photography on smart devices. And in fact, it's just going to keep going. And in fact, I think camera manufacturers themselves, those who make what we call traditional cameras, single function units, image capture devices, whatever you want to call them, are going to have to keep going too. In the end, I think this is good news for us, although at some point you go, how much do I need, right? I mean, I love my cameras now. I mean, I'm not really begging for a whole lot more here, but it is what it is, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I do think, though, along these lines, we are going to see some major activity with the next version of the iPhone in terms of its camera, and we'll know when we know, which should be later on this year. In other news, New York State Police locked down campus for suspicious package that contained developing supplies. And this is compliments of imagingresource.com. After a full lockdown of the campus and immediate evacuation of the building containing the suspicious package, it was discovered via an X-ray machine that the package was nothing more than an abandoned container filled with supplies used for photographic development. In other words, he had a big old bottle of Dettol there, left behind. And I mean, tell you, people forgetting about analog photography. Whoever thought that a bottle of Dettol and maybe some fixer, a little rapid wash in there, would now lead to suspicion of a bomb. Oh, how quickly we forget, right? Again, and that was compliments of imagingresource.com. By the way, once they saw that it was just developing supplies, and there was probably an old codger on the bomb squad there that says, hey, I know what that is. Everything was restored back to normal. And finally, Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II firmware update 1.1. And this is really cool. I was really happy to see this because the slow startup time for the EM5 Mark II was really the only thing that was bugging me about that camera. And indeed, it was bugging me. I mean, you get this natural rhythm, this natural clock. It's like with your computer, same thing. When you do something, you throw a switch, we're used to something happening within a certain amount of time. And the EM5 Mark II was not doing that. This new firmware update takes care of that. It really does pick up the speed there. And I've loaded it and I've tested it. And I'm happy to report I'm much happier now. Also, audio can be faded out of movie files created with My Clips editing. So that was also improved. And the issue of noise appearing in images captured while shooting with high-res shots has been corrected. I don't even know what that problem was, but whatever it was, it's been fixed. And I guess there's a handful of other goodies. You can get this update by opening your Olympus software that comes with your camera, and then plugging in your camera, and then going up to the update menu, choose camera update, and it'll just walk you through the steps. You have to have an internet connection, but it's a nice little firmware update. I'm glad it came quickly. And that is this week's weekly update. Story number one, Lightroom CC debuts. Okay, so let's start with the whole name thing. So if you're a Creative Cloud customer, this latest version of Lightroom that's available today, it was available today at 9:01 Pacific Daylight Time, is called Lightroom CC. Creative Cloud customers, Lightroom CC. And so they've rebranded it in a sense for Creative Cloud. Now, if you have what they call the perpetual license version, which is the boxed version, that is going to be called Lightroom 6. And there's a little split here going on. So Lightroom CC customers, you're already paying, once a month. You're on a subscription. So all this is for you is an update, right? Boom, Lightroom 6 available. Load it up, start playing with it. And I'm going to tell you what some of the features are here in a minute. If you're a boxed Lightroom user, a perpetual license person, then you have to buy it. And there's an upgrade price. And I forget what it is, and I don't want to quote the wrong price, but you're probably not going to like it. I can tell you that. And also, those that have the boxed version don't have Lightroom Mobile. They just have what's on the desktop there. Okay. After that, everything else is pretty much the same. So let's talk about what are those same things. Well, let me just give you a quick overview of the features, and then we'll talk about some of the specifics. I think the headline feature is Photo Merge built into Lightroom, and Photo Merge for both HDR and panoramas. And I'll probably talk most about that when we circle around. Facial recognition has been added, so, it's like faces. I'm sure Adobe doesn't want me to say it's like faces, but it's like faces. Advanced video slideshows, they've beefed up the whole video component. You can now add more music tracks and all sorts of stuff. It's actually pretty nice. They also created the filter brush, precisely controls which part of your image are affected by graduated or radial filters. Now you can use a brush to edit the filter's mask, adding or subtracting filter effects whenever you want. This is nice. This is a very sweet tool to add to the toolbox. Increased performance. The performance is better, and what they're doing is they have added GPU support. Now, if you're on a Mac, you need OS 10.9 or 10.10 to have GPU support, but it does offload some of the tasks to the graphics processor. It does help speed things up. It is a nice chunk of code that they've added there. A whole bunch of new camera profiles, including the Canon 5DS, Nikon D5500 and 7200, the Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II, the Olympus SH2, the Lumix GF7, Fujifilm X-A2 and X-Q2, Samsung NX500, and more, including the Hasselblad Stellar 2. And then a whole bunch. I mean, a lot. More than I would ever want to list on the air of additional new lens profiles. The latest version of Lightroom will require at least Mac OS X 10.8, but you're going to get the best performance with 10.9 or 10.10 because they have GPU support. And on the Windows side, it'll be a Windows 7 with Service Pack 1, Windows 8, or Windows 8.1 in order to run Lightroom CC or Lightroom 6. So, what do you get for your simoleons? What do you get for your money here? Let's talk about PhotoMerge. So, PhotoMerge to me was far and away the most interesting thing, although I'm pretty high on the filter brush too. Having PhotoMerge, in other words, the ability to create HDRs or panoramas within Lightroom itself without having to round trip either to an external editor such as Photoshop or a plugin, is very nice. They didn't stop there. What they've done is that they have created a very easy to use merging tool. In other words, you hardly have any buttons to push. On the HDR, you essentially pick the images that you want to use. And then you go up to the menu and you go to, you know, Photo Merge, and you pick HDR. It builds a preview for you. You have a few choices for deghosting. You have alignment. Then you off to the races you go. You do have one choice in terms of tone mapping. You either can have what I call conservative tone mapping or more aggressive. The more aggressive has more of that HDR look. It adds more compression to the highlights. You can go either way. And the reason why you can go either way, because what the product is on this, and this is true with both HDRs and panoramas coming out of Lightroom, is that your product is a DNG file, is a RAW file. So this tool was designed for RAW. In other words, if you put RAW files into it, you're going to get a RAW file out of it that's completely editable there in the develop module in Lightroom 6. This is a little different because what we're used to doing with HDRs, when we use a plugin or some outside software, we're used to a final rendered product. In other words, we pick our 5 or 7 frames that we're going to use for the merge, and then the software processes them, and then boom, out pops a baked cake. Lightroom doesn't do it that way. It does the merge. It retains as much data as possible during the merging process, pulling from RAW files, and then gives you a RAW file that you can continue to play with. And that's why there aren't a lot of buttons and choices in the merging tool, because they're expecting you to use the knowledge that you have to finish the image in the develop module. And I like this approach because I feel like it gives us more control over the image. Now, another neat thing that they've done is that you don't have to use 5 or 7 or 9 frames for these HDRs. I think you get just as good results with 2 frames. 2 frames. And so, you know, a way that I set this up and the way that I shoot it is that I use the HDR function on my Olympus cameras. And I have all sorts of different ways I can choose that HDR. And one of them is just to shoot 3 frames at 2 EVs apart. So it goes boom, boom, boom. One's at -2, one's at 0, and one's at +2. And I started doing this because with the new photo merge in Lightroom, all I need is that underexposed frame and that overexposed frame, put those into Lightroom as RAW files, use photo merge, and then it just takes it from there. You don't have to do 5 frames, 7 frames, 9 frames, you know, whatever you're used to doing. And in fact, the more frames that you add, the more risk you have of misalignment, which means the software has to correct the alignment, which means you might actually lose a little bit of quality. And also it affects deghosting. And of course, that is for when there's movement inside the subject, then the software has to, you know, kind of try to fix that. So the fewer the frames, you know, the less the risk of things going wonkers on you. And so this is another reason why I think this approach is so cool. Now, when you first look at the output of the HDR merge in Lightroom 6, you're going to go, you'd probably be a little underwhelmed. At least I know I was. So much so that I posted in the forum. I didn't want to say, hey, is this working right? Well, actually, I did want to say that, but I didn't write that. What I wrote was, it seems to take a bit of a conservative approach to, high dynamic range photography. What that file is, it might not be the most beautiful file right now. You put in a develop module, move a few sliders, and it's going to be gorgeous. I did that, and they were right. It was. So this is pretty exciting stuff. Feeding raw files into it, getting a raw file out, and then making it look the way that you want. Now, the panorama works pretty much the same. I was doing 5-frame, I think I did a couple 7-frame panoramas where I put it on a tripod, you know, did all that stuff, and then merged them. And it's pretty good. I could tell you that the panorama tool is going to get better, and I'm not going to say anything more than that. But right now, it's still pretty darn good, and it's going to get even a bit better up the road. So that part's also exciting in the sense that you can take raw files, create these panoramas. The application gives you a raw file that you can edit and go on your merry way with. So I spent a lot of time with both of these tools. And in fact, I wrote an ebook. I've been working on an ebook for Rocky Nook that goes into capture. In other words, my recommendations for capture, not only for just HDRs and panoramas in general, but specifically for Lightroom 6 / Lightroom CC, and then into workflow, like for instance, how using stacks can be very helpful if you're shooting a lot of sequences for HDR and you want to separate them and not get them confused. I get into that stuff. Then I get into using the actual tool itself, and then I get into a little develop module stuff. So I really cover both HDR and panoramas for Lightroom 6 in detail. This ebook is specifically for Lightroom 6 users. It will only cost you the price of an email address. So you can just go to Rocky Nook, rockynook.com. There'll be a promo there. I wrote a blog post for them, you know, with a link to the download page. Go there. Give them an email address, put you on, you know, their mailing list, which is a good thing because their mailing list is pretty cool and lots of good stuff going on. And then you can download the ebook for free. I worked a long time on the ebook to make sure that it was really solid, and it's a quality product. Go get it. Go get it. Read the ebook. Keep it on your iPad or your tablet, and then play with these features in Lightroom 6, HDR and Panorama. They're neat. And it's one of those things, if you read the ebook and the more that you use it, I think the more that you're going to like it. I'll also put a link directly to the download page in the show notes, thedigitalstory.com. And if you just want to go directly there, go to the show notes and it'll take you to the page. And I think you'll really, really enjoy it. So anyway, so there's that. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is the filter brush, because I think that was the other really great thing that they've included in this update. And so now, you know, the radio filter and the graduated filters are both nice. We like them, but we also know that if you're trying to bring a bright sky, you know, into a range of all the other tones in your landscape image, chances are you have a tree or a mountain or something that sort of gets in the way of that graduated filter. So yeah, the sky looks great, but then that top of the tree that's in the sky gets too dark. And basically what the filter brush allows you to do is just go in there, quickly adjust that mask so that the tree retains its natural tone, but you still get the benefits of the graduated filter in the sky. Long overdue, really handy, and you'll like it a lot. And I think that's the other big feature in Lightroom 6. So that's a nice little overview. I'm excited to have support for, you know, the EM5 Mark II, obviously, because that's a camera that I'm shooting with a lot now. But the Canon users, Nikon users, Panasonic, Samsung, there's Fujifilm. There's something in there really for everyone, both in terms of camera support and lens profiles. It's a good update. They worked hard on making it solid. And those of you that use Lightroom, I think you'll really enjoy it. And like I said, get my ebook from Rocky Nook, rockynook.com, and play with HDR and Photo Merge. Let me know what you think. Story number two, hands-on with the Panasonic 20mm f1.7-2. And two is very important. So, you know, the original Panasonic 20mm was one of the big lenses during the debut of Micro Four Thirds. It was one of the prime lenses that really got a lot of photographers excited about shooting with Micro Four Thirds, and it was a great lens. It was sharp. It's a pancake style, so it's not very deep. So it doesn't, keeps your camera nice and portable. It's fast at f1.7. It's sharp. There was a little bit of a debate about its AF performance. And my takeaway on that was it sort of depended on what camera you were using it with. And then late last year, Panasonic announced an update to this lens. What they did was they really updated the design of the barrel, which was a good thing because the previous lens, as good as it was, I didn't think it was that nice of a design on the outside. It had that two-tone thing that they were doing there for a while. And it was a plastic barrel, even though the lens mount was metal. So what they did with version 2 is that still the same great optics, 20 millimeters, which means its effective focal length of 40 millimeters, still f1.7. The AF is solid, at least on the cameras that I shoot with it. But now it has this nice, stylish, black metal lens barrel, and it really looks good. Really looks good. I'm shooting with it primarily on EM10, an Olympus EM10. It performs really well on that camera. And the reason why I like it on that camera, that is pretty much my street shooting camera, because it's so small, it draws no attention to itself. And then you put that 20mm f1.7 on there. You have a nice field of view there. It's slightly wide, but not too wide. And it has a little bit of reach. And then if you use the 2x digital zoom, you effectively have an 80mm portrait lens, which is really terrific. So I think it's a great lens for street shooting, for event photography, for just banging around with just one lens on your camera. And I love the f1.7. I have to tell you that speed really makes a difference for existing light photography. So all the way around, I just feel like this is a terrific lens. It performs well, at least on the cameras I've tested on. It's very sharp. You get nice soft backgrounds. I mean, I think it does a great job with a bokeh and softening the backgrounds. It looks good. The construction is solid. The only real downside, I have to say, is that when they redesigned it, when Panasonic redesigned it and re-released this lens, they upped the price. And it's about $428 right now if you buy it brand new. Now, I don't think it's too expensive at that price, at $428. But I'll be honest with you, it was more than I wanted to spend. So I had held off on it for quite a while. And then I really started, I have two EM10s, a black one and a silver one. And I started using the black one more and more for my street shooting because I'd wear a black t-shirt and it, you know, you get the picture, right? And I hate putting silver lenses on black camera bodies. So my 17mm f1.8 was not really an option for me on the black OMD. So I had to go, okay, I'm going to get a black prime lens for street shooting. And I revisited the Panasonic 20mm because it was perfect for the EM10. So what I did was I went on the used market and I found one that was in just pristine shape. It was beautiful. Came in the box, the whole deal. Not a mark on it, for $327. And that I thought, okay, I can do that. So I went for that, and I've been using it now for a bit. I published a couple articles about it, including a shoot that I did at Oracle Arena before the first NBA playoff game with the Warriors versus New Orleans Pelicans, and where I was circling around the arena before the game doing street shooting with all the fans and stuff that were buying beers and getting food and interacting with one another and taking pictures themselves and all that. It was fun. It was a great street shooting environment. And it gave the lens a good test because it was indoors, but yet there was mixed lighting from windows and overheads and everything. I love the way it softened the background. I love the sharpness of it. I love the way people just didn't pay attention to me while I was shooting with it. So, and those of you that are coming to the workshop this weekend, we have the San Francisco Street Shooting Workshop this weekend. I'll have that lens with me so you can take a look at it. And if you want to put it on your camera and play with it. So I give high marks to the Panasonic 20mm f1.72 lens. Like I said, the only downside is that I think it's slightly pricey at $428 brand new. But if you're looking for a lens that fits what it does, I don't think you'll be disappointed at all with the way it looks or the way it performs. And I think it's a hair better for Olympus shooters than Panasonic shooters in the sense that it doesn't have image stabilization built into the lens. It doesn't have optical image stabilization. So when you put it on an Olympus body, you have sensor-based stabilization. So you get that benefit with the lens. You put it on most of the Panasonic cameras. There's only one that I can think of that has sensor-based IS. Then it's a great lens, and you get lens correction and all that stuff, but you won't get image stabilization. Pretty nice. Definitely a thumbs up on that prime lens. It's a beauty. Okay, let's take a stroll over to the screening room. Today's screening room selection is Photo Restoration Techniques, Damaged Black and White Images with Neil Rhodes. So, you know, Neil really solves a problem for us because you know, I think almost all of us have, you know, some family photos. We photographers tend to be by default the historians in most families. So we end up with some of this stuff. And plus we have the scanner or access to a scanner and software to work on these. But just because we have the tools doesn't mean we know necessarily what to do. And I think photo restoration is kind of its own animal in a lot of ways. So what Neil does is he really shows you how to fix damaged black and white images, you know, how to scan these prints, and then go through and some ideas for touching them up to make them look as good as possible. And he does a very good job with this. If you have inherited the family restoration project, then I think you're definitely going to want to take a look at what Neil has done here. You can see the introductory movie by going to the Digital Story Screening Room. That's at lynda.com, L-Y-N-D-A, lynda.com/the-digital-story. There you can watch the movie and, if you wish, sign up for your 7-day free trial to watch all of Neil's movies, plus everything else that's in their extensive online catalog, including more than 20 by yours truly. And again, the screening room selection for this week is Photo Restoration Techniques, Damaged Black and White Images with Neil Rhodes. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. Start out with our friends over at Red River Paper. They have a terrific Facebook page, facebook.com/redriverpaper, and they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they are your source not only for printing paper in just about every size imaginable, including panoramas, including fine art note cards, you name it, they probably have it. There's a sign actually at a hardware store that's up here in Northern California called Freeman's, and their sign says, if we don't have it, you don't need it. Isn't that good? I sort of feel that way about Red River paper when it comes to printing. They also have ink for Epson and Canon printers, and then they have all the other goodies like, you know, glassine sleeves and all that stuff. Literally one-stop shopping for your printing needs. And I'll tell you, we've had members of our virtual camera club lately get kind of hot on printing. I think the Epson P600s has something to do with that. And, you know, some like printing on matte, some like printing on the, you know, ultra gloss. It all depends. But the thing that I'm hearing is the satisfaction that comes when that image comes out of the printer and you're looking at it, you're holding it in your hands and you're going, this is artwork and I made it. Not only did I take the picture, but I did the whole thing. And this will last for decades, regardless of what happens with technology or anything else. That is a neat feeling. You can get all the supplies to help you enable that neat feeling by going to Red River Paper, by clicking on a tile that's on every page of the digital story. And I also want to mention our good friends over at SizzlePix, SizzlePix.com, and they create for you. You send your image to them, you upload it to them, and what you get back in the mail is something incredible. An image that's basically infused onto polished aluminum that you can hang directly on the wall. It's like a retina display, in fact, that you can hang on the wall. And they have a special going right now through the month of April, 20% off one image, 25% off two or more shipped together. All you have to do is put TDS April in the comments field when you place your order at sizzlepix.com, SizzlePix.com, and they will apply the discount. Beautiful stuff, and now at a very nice discount. And finally, if you're ordering through B&H or Amazon, for instance, if you decide to get that Panasonic 20mm f1.7 lens, please go over to the digital story first. In the second column, I have advertising tiles for both Amazon and B&H. Just click on them to go over to the site. Doesn't make any difference where they take you. Just go over there, search for what you want. And then when you make that purchase, that helps support the site and much appreciated by me. Okay, that's going to do it for this week. Lightroom 6, very nice. They did a good job on that. Panasonic 20mm, ooh, so much fun. It's a great time to be a photographer. Come back next week. I'll have more goodies for you then. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.